This podcast is made possible by the generosity of supporting members. Please visit dharmaocean.org to learn more about becoming a supporting member. You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. Today's talk is from a weekend retreat Reggie co-led with his spiritual brother, the Dagara shaman Maladoma Somme. Reggie draws upon his training as a religious historian to discuss the alienating movement away from earth-based spirituality in the development of the so-called high religions of agricultural civilizations. This talk was given in 2008 at a weekend retreat in Boulder called African and Tibetan Approaches to Working with the Elements.
Yeah, so good morning, everybody. I personally really appreciated last night. It was a lot of fun, but also a lot of things I think came up that we should explore together. When you sit in meditation, a lot of the time, you visit the other world. You're sitting here, and it looks like nothing's happening. And in your body, maybe nothing's happening here. But you're visiting the other world, and you're talking to your guides and your spirits. And there's a lot of dancing up there, by the way, or down there, however you see it. There's a lot of joy. There's a lot of correction, you know, you get corrected. They tell you, you know, hey man, you're fucked. That wasn't good. Clean up your act. And you go, well, come on, you have to help me clean up my act. So there's a lot of conversation. But there's also, you have to check in with the other world because every time you check in, there's something different going on. And even if you have one main guide, you know, you work with, who's with you and helping you. In my case, it's Trungpa Rinpoche. And he was probably on my case before I was born. He was definitely on my case during his lifetime. And he's really on my case now. And what his thing is, he came here to tear the mask off the modern person and reveal the Aboriginal person who's underneath. And we'll talk about that a little bit this morning and tomorrow morning. And I'll show you some of the things that I've learned in this process, and I want to show you. But this is not an Oedipal relationship. Oedipal means, you know, there's the big daddy up there, and you know we're down here running around trying to please, as Maladoma was saying, please this like big hierarchical authority figure. It's not like that. He's a friend, but in the very unusual way that the unseen world relates to us, which is most of the time he's not in evidence in his human form. And you go and try to find him and he's not there. One time I went at an inappropriate moment to try to get some help and he turned around and pulled his pants down and mooned me. And the basic message was, you know, I'll be in touch. Don't call me, I'll call you. Our journey on this path is to become adults, and adults in the ancient way, which is that we have an eye-level relationship to reality. You know, from a certain point of view, the unseen world is our home, in a way. I mean, the unseen world, as I said, this is the unseen world. Right now it's unseen by us. But it's not somewhere else. It's here, and they're here. They are the underpinning. They are the friends who are with us and among us when we make this human journey. And we are them in a certain sense, and they're helping us grow into that understanding so that we actually become unseen beings also, in the sense that we inhabit our humanity fully. We become everything that we could possibly be. So, as we were talking about last night, we may be modern people, but the full potential of our humanness is with us. It's in us at this moment. There's no diminishing of the possibilities of the modern person. The only problem is that we have come to think of ourselves in a lot of very degraded ways, and we don't give ourselves a chance. And I think, you know, when Maladoma comes from Burkina Faso and brings his traditions to us, and when somebody like me teaches the ancient traditions of Tibetan Buddhism, it's not really about Burkina Faso, it's not really about Tibetan Buddhism, it's about us. And it's about what we can be and what we must be, what we must be. So I'm going to comment a lot on what Maladoma said about meditation last night. But the first thing is, when you're sitting here, you may be in the unseen world dancing with joy with your guides. And very likely that's where you are. And you need to be still so that you can give yourself to it fully. This morning, I want to talk a little bit about this very unusual lineage. Unusual, not because it's Buddhist and that's unusual, because these days Buddhism isn't really unusual anymore. It's very much part of the modern, I don't know, marketplace, unfortunately. But it's unusual because it's out of step with Buddhism itself. This lineage of Chogyam Trungpa. It's completely out of step with Buddhism in all of its forms. It's an outsider, it's a renegade tradition, it's an outlaw tradition. And I need to make that clear, because I know a lot of people will have, when people hear, well, you know, we're doing Buddhism, they're going to have a lot of ideas about it, and I need you to understand, no, it's different from what you might think. And then the practices that I'm going to teach you will make a lot more sense to you. So I'm going to encapsulate where this lineage fits in, and particularly with the indigenous traditions, because it has a very unique relationship to the indigenous traditions. We humans have been around a long time. And I like to trace our beginning to the time when our primate ancestors came down from the trees and began to roam the savannas of Africa. And I think, you know, we know now that the higher primates are so close to us. I mean, they are us. It's us yesterday. So we have 60 million years of history behind us of close, you know, close evolution. And as far as our species and how we go about things, you know, probably a million years ago, we started to really kind of begin to come into our current shapes. This is a long time ago. And during that whole period and down almost to the present, we have been certain people and we've lived in a certain way. And it's a way that we think of as the Aboriginal traditions, the indigenous traditions of this planet. You know, vanishing as they are, those people represent what we have been almost our entire history. Modern genetic research indicates that we haven't really changed since, you know, the big cataclysm was the invention of agriculture or the discovery of agriculture, you know, 8 or 10,000 years ago. And from an evolutionary standpoint, that has no significance. Physically, emotionally, spiritually, genetically, we are Aboriginal people. Most of what we think of as modern culture is genetically determined. All of the things, even you know, research is showing now that even things like art and language and spirituality, the initiatory cycle of Aboriginal people, it's actually genetically programmed, and it's actually in us. It's in us, modern people. It's all there. 10,000 years ago, there was a shift for a lot of reasons. You know, most of the reasons probably will never be understood, but something happened. And, you know, we suddenly separated from nature. And we began to view nature as an other to be controlled and managed and exploited and dominated. That's the agricultural mentality. And all of a sudden, the reciprocity with nature, the sense of exchange of energy, the appreciation of the natural world as our neighbors and our friends and our helpers and our protectors, the idea that this world of ours is alive with presence and intelligence. You know, it may be a different intelligence from the one we have, but in some ways maybe it's a lot more intelligent. The other day, I went up to this mountain above our house, and there's a valley at about 10,300 feet, and then there's this incredible mountain, a protector, actually, above us. And I looked out, and I looked at the trees growing, and I realized that they had their own life and their own awareness, and some of them had been there for hundreds of years. And they were looking back and looking at me. You know, that changes your whole way of feeling about being in this world. And it's so hidden from us as modern people. But it's in us. That way of perceiving nature is actually us. Already, it's already us. And it's in us that we can never run away from. We can never really separate. All we can do is pretend that we're not Aboriginal people. When agriculture came about, we have a huge shift in the way in which people think about themselves. But it wasn't a change in the people. The people never changed. Suddenly we have a huge growth of human population. Previous to that time, the average community, it's imagined or supposed, you know, through all kinds of research into prehistoric times, was about 25 people. And they wandered a territory of maybe 500 square miles. And they were related to other similar groups with clan relationships. But the human community was one of intense intimacy, where you were known completely by the others. And the sense of interconnectedness and working together at the same time, as Maldoma was saying, the sense of the uniqueness of each person and their value to the community. I mean, this is who we are. Also, at the time agriculture came about, we have the growth of cities. We have the first ecological depredation of the planet has been discovered, believe it or not. At the same time agriculture came about, we have the first beginnings of the decline of the planet from an ecological standpoint. The first, you know, deforestation and farmlands turning into deserts. We have the growth of armies. We have the growth of city-states and, you know, warfare. And many of the diseases we think of now as modern, that's when they came about. And we also have the invention of writing, which Meldum was talking about yesterday, and writing is a pathological phenomenon. Reading and writing is actually, it creates a cancer of the spirit. We didn't write for 60 million years, and then at the very end of history, the very last moment that the last 10,000 years represents, we started doing this thing. Writing and reading is a way of separating from our bodies, from our emotions, from our perceptual life, from nature. It's a way of creating a different level of consciousness that's superficial and cut off. You know, I know, to say this sounds insane, but if you look at it in terms of evolution, in terms of our biological makeup, in terms of our history, you can see that writing has caused terrible, terrible things in our state of mind and in our emotional life. And then as a function of writing and reading, we have the so-called high religions. And they are high in the sense that they are somewhere up there and nobody knows where they are. They're disconnected from the earth. In other words, these so-called high religions, and you know, I don't mean to offend anybody here, okay? But we have to start talking about things in a different way now. And I'm not saying that all the great religions don't have aboriginal depth, because they do. But the overall trend in the so-called high religions, they're literate, they're bureaucratic, they're institutional, they're hierarchical, they're patriarchal, they put down nature, they justify exploitation of nature, the subjugation and domination of the human person. I mean, most of the high religions, this is their business. This is what they do. When you really look at it, and you look at it in relationship to the aboriginal traditions, it's not a pretty picture. In high school, or even junior high school, I think we were all taught human life began with the invention of civilization 10,000 years ago. There's a huge amount of research now that suggests that actually that's when human life began to end. The, you know, Buddhist traditions are not so very different. They also have all of these problems. As you know, those of you who have studied Tibetan Buddhism and other forms of Buddhism, they are institutional. Most of them have engaged in slavery openly. I mean, nowadays it's different because the world has changed. They own huge properties all over Asia. They're politically very well connected and largely corrupt in many instances. It doesn't mean within Buddhist tradition there aren't wonderful people and very great teachers, but we're talking about the overall trend. However, within the whole Buddhist tradition, because of meditation, there has been a link back to the aboriginal person that is within each one of us. And from a certain point of view, that's really what meditation is all about, you know, from my point of view. And I think from the point of view of many people. People separate themselves from the modern world because to live too close to the modern world is to make the journey back impossible, to recover our fundamental aboriginal identity. So meditation, you separate. And most of the Buddhist traditions, particularly if they emphasize practice, that's what they're doing. They're creating a space. Now, the interesting thing is, initially, you know, as modern people, and Buddhism is a modern religion, it really is. It's a modern religion that has, or a modern form of spirituality that has exists, you know, it came about during the time of agriculture, intense agriculture in Northeast India. And the Buddha basically said, he didn't say, I'm trying to create something new. He said, I'm trying to find the way back, which is very interesting. I'm trying to find the way back to a more fundamental way of being human than what's going on in my world. And he went into the forest and this is very important, he did nothing. He sat. And first of all, he was doing something. He did try to do little things, like he thought, this is spirituality, let me try this. And then he thought, well, that doesn't really work, let me try that. And in his mind, he had this idea of what spirituality was, but it was wrong. And eventually, he came to realize, the only way I'm going to find the way back is actually if I stop doing everything, if I just simply allow my state of being to rest in complete non-effort and non-activity. And when he did that, all of a sudden something started to happen, which is the voice of his primordial nature began to be heard. He began to hear something coming from the depths. And if we want to look back now at that process in light of genetic research and, archaeology and paleontology and so on, what we might say is that all of his habitual ways of thinking and acting in the world as an agricultural person, which is what he was, a person who was very much enmeshed in modernity, all of those were actually hiding his basic nature. And because his basic primordial nature was alive and well within him, the minute he stopped overlaying it with something that was different, it began to show itself. And he realized, you know, this is what we need to do. We need to make room for the fundamental primordial being that we are to show itself. And it will show itself, and it did show itself. Here's a guy who eventually wound up, after a long and very painful journey, incredibly painful and lonely and devastating from a certain point of view. And we, even though the biographies aren't going to tell you, I mean, we know in terms of the spiritual life, there must have been so many moments when he just wanted to die. There must have been so many periods of his life during this journey he was making when he felt completely alone and rejected by everybody, even his friends, his spiritual practitioner friends. Huge amount of cost. Everything has to be given up along the way. Every idea we have about how things are, every effort to protect ourselves, every attempt to create some kind of safe haven for ourselves has to be abandoned. Every parental figure needs to be dethroned. Every sense that there's something outside of us that is more true than what we know has to be eliminated, torn away from our world. Until, you know, the journey of meditation is becoming more and more naked, more and more exposed, and from a certain point of view, more and more helpless. We become completely helpless. And when that happens, then the help begins to come. But it comes, as Maldoma was saying, it comes from within us. It begins to emerge.
To download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.